Mac, I feel like I should be playing the Welcome Back, Cotter theme song as we as we open this episode.
It's been a while. We both took long vacations. I went to Europe, came back from Europe with COVID, and then Eric went off to the Galapagos and
came back with COVID.
Yes, twinsies.
Yeah, dude. And for the record, we live like 1,000+ miles apart. Like, this is not related.
Yeah, it wasn't like I handed it to Eric.
Yeah.
So yeah, we both had big international vacations and both got sick. So that's what kind of took us a while to get back up to speed here.
So apologies for our prolonged absence, but not much you can do when you're down and out with the COVID.
So that kind of got us thinking. Like we've been away for a little while.
We're back.
You know, we made it through some big trips and some illness, but we're back, and it got us thinking about second acts.
Exactly.
And how that could relate to music, you know, an artist that's, you know, was huge in one band or as a solo artist and then went on to even bigger things, either, you know, in another project or as a solo artist coming from a different band. So that's kind of where we landed for our topic on our return episode.
Yeah, I kind of, I like to refer to it as like lightning striking twice. You always hear that expression, you know, lightning never strikes twice. Well, for some artists, you know, throughout musical history, it has. And sometimes, like you said, you know, they can go on to even bigger things than they were previously well known for. Every time I see an interview with Dave Grohl, I can't help but think to myself, what a lucky son of a bitch. And I don't mean that to downplay his talent or his drive or his hustle or anything like that. He's earned everything, you know, everything he has, he's worked hard for. Super talented, super amazing musician, songwriter, all that thing. We're just a great rock star, phenomenal on stage. But he could have easily just, when Nirvana fizzled out because of, you know, obviously Kurt Cobain's death, he could have just disappeared into the where are they now file of...
And
of,
still been a legend.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Would have counted his money in obscurity somewhere, you know, and still been a legend. Absolutely. Just what he did in Nirvana alone, he earned his place in rock and roll history, his place in the Hall of Fame, all of that. But that apparently wasn't enough for Mr. Grohl.
Right. He was sitting on a ton of material while he was with Nirvana. He had his own kind of solo material that he'd been just writing and recording and decided, hey, after the end of Nirvana, he wanted to put out an album.
Yeah, and some of it was stuff that he was afraid to bring to Kurt, which is kind of like endearing if you think about it. Like, you know, here he is, this amazing songwriter, which history has shown us.
Yeah.
But at the time, that wasn't what he was known for. He was the drummer in Nirvana, and he was in a band, as the way he saw it, with one of the greatest lyricists / songwriters in modern music history.
Sure.
He doesn't want to hear my stupid little songs. Right, so, I mean, he was sitting on these gems that, you know, maybe they would have made it Nirvana. Maybe they wouldn't. I don't know. But thank God he didn't just throw it away or just, you know, give up on it or not pursue that fascination with getting in the studio and actually putting these things to tape.
And you think about the trajectory of the Foo Fighters too, just starting as sort of a one-man project with Dave.
Yeah, totally.
And then, you know, aligning with all these great musicians and, you know, how many years later now, 20, what, maybe 30? I don't know.
Yeah, like 30 years, going on 30 years.
And they're still selling out stadiums. They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, just, wow, what a ride.
Yeah, and it's crazy too, because that was totally, like you mentioned, he did the DIY, like Prince route, the Trent Reznor route. You know, that first album is all Dave Grohl. Guitar, bass, drums, vocals, you know, everything. Yeah. That's all him. And so he put the band together after, because, you know, people were pushing him to, hey, take this stuff on tour, man. People want to hear this stuff. You know, he had no idea that it was going to turn into what it turned into. And I love, he's said this quote so many times, but had he known it was going to be this big, he would have picked a better name, because Foo Fighters is the worst name in rock and roll.
I know. I love hearing him say that. That's so
funny. That's the best. Yeah. I mean, and self-deprecation, you know, will take you a long way with me, man. I love people that can still, you know, look at themselves and their career and just not take it too seriously. Yeah. And
no, Dave doesn't seem to have a problem with that. He's more than happy to point out, you know, all the mistakes he's made or some of the goofy shit that he's done.
Oh, 100%. I mean, dude falls off stage like every other gig, like, and just laughs about it. You know what I mean? Even when he broke his fucking leg. I mean, yeah, the guy's just, he's just awesome, man. He's a super, super cool guy. Amazing work ethic, truly loves music. That's another thing that, you know, you see it when he performs, man. It's just, it oozes out of him. You can tell he loves every note that he's playing and every note that he's singing. He truly, truly loves it. That's why when Taylor passed away, you know, there was a lot of speculation and wonder as to what that was going to do to the Foo Fighters. Are they going to call it a day? Is this over? And even in my own house, you know, Chris is a huge Foo Fighters. She loves Dave Grohl. We always, that's her hall pass. We always joke about, you know, if she ever got a chance with Dave, you know, I'd be like, oh, well, I mean, it's Dave Grohl. But yeah, so it was a big, you know, question mark. Like, what are they going to do? And I said all along, I'm like, there's no way he's calling it quits. There's no way. As much as, you know, he loved sharing that stage with Taylor every night. That was his musical soulmate. I'm like, he loves what he does too much to stop doing it. And he knows that his fans love it just as much, if not more than he does. He wasn't going anywhere, man. And sure enough, man, they got Josh Freese. They're back out on the road. And, you know, yeah. So the guy loves it. I feel like, and he's one of those artists too, that like the day it stops being fun, he'll just go away.
And you know what, dude, I'm going to, because we're on this topic of second acts, I'm going to like do a little sub bullet here. Taylor Hawkins. I mean,
oh my God.
He starts out with Alanis Morissette and you know, then he's in the Foo Fighters. So, I mean, that is that a second act? I don't know. Maybe.
Dude, look, as a performing musician, you know, not the songwriter, not the front person, you know what I mean? As a drummer, as a supporting cast member at that level, getting the Alanis Morissette gig, he probably thought that was it. Like he hit the mountaintop. He played with Sass Jordan too. Let's not forget. But yeah, in his mind, he was probably like, dude, this is like the pinnacle of my career, man. I'm playing for Alanis Morissette. Dude had no idea.
Bro, I hang on a second. I got to give you some mad props here. Like you got COVID brain and you threw out a Sass Jordan reference. Like that is, your brain is working, bro.
I'm not firing on all cylinders, but maybe like 7.5. that eighth cylinder is not all there, but yeah. Anybody who's not familiar with Sass Jordan, man, please go check out Sass Jordan. She's awesome. Yeah. So, so good. And yeah, Taylor played on some of that early stuff and toured with her too. So really, really cool stuff.
So another just huge, huge second act and an obvious one. There's a few obvious ones here that we need to talk about.
Yeah, for sure.
This one's right up there. Let's talk about AC/DC.
Oh yeah.
You know, losing Bon Scott in early 1980, coming off of Highway to Hell, their most successful album to date. So they're at the pinnacle at that point where Highway to Hell is
they were huge.
And they finally, you know, they broke in America and everything's going their way. And then Bon dies early 1980, like February 1980.
Yep.
By April, they're recording Back in Black with Brian Johnson.
That's insane, dude.
A few months later, they're recording Back in Black. And it came out just another few months later in the year. So in like an 8-month span, you go from losing your lead singer, charismatic front man, just
one of the
think
best
of all the iconic songs he sang on, to bringing in Brian Johnson, and then getting even bigger. Back in Black was the biggest album ever. I mean,
it's one of the best-selling records of all time.
And of course, AC/DC just continued to get big from there, the follow-up, for those about to rock. So, you know, listen to Bon Scott, think about all the songs he sang on, listen to Brian Johnson.
Yeah.
Boy, it's kind of hard. Like, they both have just iconic songs that they were a part of.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, different styles. Obviously, I think maybe Bon was a little bit more versatile.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was kind of where I was going next. Yeah, they could have easily gone out and found a singer who looked like Bon and sounded like Bon. I mean, when anybody gets that big, there's a million people out there trying to emulate them. So, I mean, YouTube didn't exist at the time, but we see it with YouTube all the time, like Journey.
Yeah.
You know, when Steve Perry left, you know, they found the guy that currently sings with them on YouTube. And he was in like a Journey cover band or something, and he sounded exactly like Steve Perry. So, you know, but this was pre-YouTube, this is pre-internet, this is pre-all that stuff. But they could have found somebody that fit the mold of Bon Scott better than Brian Johnson. Yeah. So I give them credit for having some balls, first of all, and going a little bit in a different direction. They're not so vastly different that it sounds like a different band. I mean, I think you or I could sing for AC/DC and it's still going to sound like AC/DC just because their sound is so iconic. It doesn't matter who's singing, but their vocal styles are similar enough that to the casual fan, it's not that big of a change, but it's pretty different to those of us who really are fans and, and really into the music. And they took a chance doing that. And obviously it worked. And Brian Johnson, another, you know, super charismatic frontman, but so different from Bond.
Yeah, so different from Bond. I mean, you know, a song like one of my personal favorites, you know, a song like Bride On. You know, that's not a song necessarily
slow
that
bluesy.
Brian Johnson can sing, but Bond can pull that off and do it well. So again, just different styles. With Brian, they went a little more rock, a little bit heavier with the sound. And it worked. Like you said, I would never disrespect Brian Johnson. I love all things AC/DC.
Oh, God.
But they somehow managed to do it with two vastly different singers.
Yeah, that's not easy to do. And again, too, you know, when you're at that peak of fame, it's easy for fans to kind of turn their nose up at whatever the new thing is. People don't like change. And when people fall in love with a band, and especially when you're replacing the voice, man, I hate to say this as a drummer, but like, dude, you can replace drummers, man, unless it's like an icon, unless you're a John Bonham or, you know, even like a Tommy Lee, man, like they did it. They toured without Tommy a few times. I mean, come on, man, it's not Motley Crue without Tommy Lee up there. But yeah, you know, for the average band, you can replace a drummer, you can replace a bass player. You start getting into like lead guitar players and lead singers, and it's tough. It's really hard. It can drastically change the entire, not just the sound, but the whole image of the band. And like I said, people don't like change. So it was dangerous for them. They had no choice. I mean, Bond had passed away, unfortunately. But man, all these years later, I hope that they're still like giddy about the fact that they made the choice they made. Because man, I mean, you know, history has been very kind to them. Brian Johnson's a monster, man. Still doing it to this day.
Yeah, they're doing it, man. I love it.
Well, and that brings me to the next band I want to talk about. We talked about two bands that, you know, had some tragedy and, you know, people were forced to make decisions that they never thought they'd make or never wanted to make. This next act, it was just egos, man. Nobody died, you know, it was just egos got too big and people thought they were, you know, bigger than what's the expression about, you know, the greater than the sum of its parts, you know, people thought, people in this band thought that they were bigger than their part. And no, and I'm talking about Van Halen, man. And this works for both sides. If you think about it, you got Van Halen by 1984. I'm going to say the biggest American rock act at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Say, I mean, who was even in their stratosphere at that point? I mean, they were huge. They were the biggest rock band. Totally on top. The metal people liked them. The pop people liked them. You know, Van Halen just, they bridged so many gaps for so many different, you know, fans of music. And they were just phenomenal at it. And they had arguably the best frontman in the game in David Lee Roth. And man, like I said, just without gun, I mean, there's a million and one documentaries about Van Halen and what happened and all that stuff. We won't go into every single detail, but I mean, basically it came down to, egos got too big. Dave wanted this. Eddie wanted this. Eddie didn't want that. Dave wanted that. Didn't want that. I mean, it was just with that back and forth. And then finally they split. Now they're both in these precarious positions with their careers because Van Halen is now without their charismatic frontman who, you know, was he the best singer on the planet? Far from it. But
frontman
live, nobody could touch Van Halen, dude. David Lee Roth was the shit. He could go, I mean, look at the 83 US Festival?
Yeah, yeah.
Just goes out on stage, shit faced drunk, dude, forgetting lyrics, just a train wreck of a performance. And I still watch it to this day and go, God damn, they were good.
I mean, like, I don't compare him to Freddie Mercury as a vocalist, but as a frontman, I put him up there. I put him up there with Freddie.
Absolutely, dude. All day long. All day long. Diamond David Lee Roth, man. There was nobody better. And now he's gone. So now he's got something to prove. Oh, I don't need Van Halen. I can do this on my own. And now Van Halen's like, shit, what are we going to do? And enter Sammy Hagar, they went on to make some of their biggest hits. I mean, they had their first number one album with Sammy Hagar. Never had that with Dave. They found a whole new commercial audience. They were getting more plays on Top 40 than ever before. Not to say they didn't have any, but they were getting more and more Top 40 play than they've ever seen. It opened up Eddie to a world of different songwriting techniques and instrumentation and all these things that he wanted to do and explore, but was kind of being held back because Dave was afraid, you know, to loosen up that formula, man. It was, you know, this is what we do. We're bombastic. We're loud. We're guitar, bass, drums, vocals. Yeah, Eddie was able to get some keyboards in there here and there, but I mean, there's a reason why 1984 caused so much friction in the band because there's so many keyboards on it. And Dave wasn't about it, you know? And so you can see the progression and the direction they went with Sammy. So anyway, Van Halen had a hugely successful career after the departure of David Lee Roth for many, many, many years. My first real concert, I'm making the air quotes with my fingers, my first real concert, it was my first concert, sans parents, let's say. But yeah, it was the 5150 tour.
Yes.
Yeah. Worcester Centrum.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, and then Dave goes on to a string of successful albums himself. And I still say Eat 'Em and Smile is one of my all-time favorite great records album from that era, man. I mean, oh my God, it's so good. Steve Vai on guitar, Billy Sheehan on bass, Greg Bissonette on drums. Talk about a fucking like powerhouse lineup, dude. Yeah. Good God. I mean, some of the best, if not the best players in the game at that point, you know, playing hard rock music. He gets them all on board and just puts out a dime of a record, dude. It's just... That album's perfect from start
and you're
to
never
love it.
Gonna ever forget the video for Yankee Rose, right?
Yeah, oh my God, dude.
Give me a glazed donut and a bottle of anything to go.
Yeah, to go. Oh my God, his videos were so good. But again, that was Dave, man. He, you know, he could have been and I'm not saying he was a shitty singer, but he could have been a shitty singer. And still made it just on his charisma alone and his, you know, his whole everything about him, you know. His whole rock star aura was just amazing. Yeah. You know, he was great on video. He was great on stage. He was amazing. So, yeah, man, again, Dave could have fizzled out without Van Halen. Van Halen could have easily fizzled out without Dave. And they both continued to shine for many, many years. Ultimately, you know, got back together, but I don't know, man, it was a novelty act by then. Unfortunately, I hate to say it. I mean, not to say that there's nothing redeeming on those later records, but it just, the magic, you know, was gone to a degree. And then with Michael Anthony being out of the band, and no disrespect to Wolfgang, I'm a big fan, but it was just, of course, but it was just, I don't know. It was weird. And again, man, you can't take away from what they created and, you know, the early, you know, decades of that band. And
of course, even Sammy. I mean,
I mean, he alone.
Career as a solo artist, Montrose, solo artist, Van Halen, like that guy. He's had three or four different acts.
Yeah, before he even walked through the door of the Van Halen camp, he was already a rock star. I mean, I Can't Drive 55 was huge, you know? And as a solo artist, he had his own thing going. I mean, he had a comfortable career going. He didn't, you know, have to do Van Halen. It wasn't like he wasn't paying his bills. But, I mean, I'm glad he did. We got some amazing records out of that.
I still feel like 5150 could have been a Dave album. Like some of those,
I can see that.
Some of those songs on there could have been, you know, where the next album that was clearly a Sammy album.
OU812?
Yeah, OU812 is clearly Sammy, but like 5150, I felt at times like there's some songs in there that could have been Dave songs. Summer Nights, you know, stuff like that, I think would have.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny with AI now, I'm surprised, and maybe it exists. Maybe we need to go on YouTube and do a deep dive. Like maybe somebody has put like, if you haven't, somebody, if anybody's listening that does AI, I would love to hear David Lee Roth's voice singing on some of those classic Sammy Hagar songs, like Summer Nights. I want to hear Dave sing. That's amazing. That's a great idea, dude. That's really funny.
Let's take a serious left turn here.
Okay.
And let's talk about Dr. Dre.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about a great second act. I mean, obviously, you know, one of the founding members of NWA, just groundbreaking hip-hop rap group from the 90s. Then the solo career kicks in. His solo career with, you know, The Chronic and everything that came after that. Huge albums.
Yeah.
but all the talent he developed along the way, right? Yeah. Snoop Dogg, 50, M, you know, just it keeps going. The guy just finds talent and is able to produce him to perfection. And then as a businessman, reinvents himself again with Beats by Dre.
Mm-hmm.
Just as an artist and then / businessman, I guess we're talking second acts, but I'm thinking three or four here for Dr. Dre.
Dre, people love to use the word genius. And I think because people use it so much, it's gotten watered down to a degree. I mean, like, you know, we used to call people like Leonardo da Vinci a genius and Albert Einstein a genius. Now we're talking like Dr. Dre is a genius. But whatever. In today's accepted definition of genius, Dre is a genius, dude. I mean, have a successful music career as a performer is already admirable enough. That's extremely difficult to make it, you know, to that degree and that level of stardom and fame. And then to be able to work behind the scenes as a producer, make music, make beats for some of the industry's biggest artists and make hits for them. You know, there's a lot of artists that, you know, he's on the production side of. And if it wasn't for Dre, that song wouldn't have been huge because no matter how great the vocal delivery is, it was the beat, you know, that did it. And Dre has a sound, man. You know, he's got that iconic sound. You know that the first three or four notes, man, oh, that's a Dre beat, you know? And so he's super, super talented in that respect as well. The ability to, like you said, find talent. And go, this cat's got something. I mean, Eminem, looking back, oh yeah, he's super talented. And there's a white guy that can rap really, really well. Seemed like a no-brainer. That wasn't a no-brainer. That was dangerous, man. That could have blown up in his face. Not people could have easily been far less accepting of Eminem than they were. In the hip-hop community, they could have said, no, this guy's fucking lame. Dre saw something in him that, for whatever reason, you know, it's not like Dre's the only guy that M ever approached.
Right.
You know, people had turned down Eminem. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I know.
One of the biggest rappers in recorded music history. And, like, imagine being one of those producers that was like, nah, I'm just not seeing it. But, you know, so in that respect, he's also extremely intelligent. And then, like you said, as a businessman, being part of the whole Interscope thing and doing, you know, Beats by Dre. And I mean, if that's not a genius, man, all right, show me what one is.
And I mean, just like we'd said, you know, with Dave Grohl, like Dr. Dre, you know, it could have been the end of NWA and that could have been all you ever heard from him. And he'd still be a legend. Yeah. Just
absolutely, so influential. 100%.
But no, you remember, you know, first time you heard Snoop with Dre, whether it was 187 Deep Cover or on the Chronic, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Who? It just blew your mind when you heard Snoop, and you think that's Dre's ear, that Dre heard something. Dre went, that's the guy right there. And he just had that knack of finding talent.
At least in a musical sense, that's a genius if you ask
me. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And you know, let's not forget the other, you know, acts that went on to do huge things from NWA as well. I mean, Ice Cube is another, there's a second act for you. Because not only did he, you know, spin off to a solo career making music, and actually he was the first one to split NWA and say, fuck you guys, I'm doing this myself, and dropped, let's be honest, the greatest diss track of all time.
The greatest diss track of all time.
I mean, no Vaseline, dude. How old is that song? And like, you ask people today, even young cats, you know what I mean? That know their, you know, hip hop history, and say, dude, what's the greatest diss track of all time? If they don't say No Vaseline, it's at least going to be in their top five.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that song is, it's ruthless.
There's
man.
Nothing that will ever move that song out of my top five diss track list.
No, there's no way.
Nothing.
I can't see anything coming down the pike that could possibly, I mean, it's just so personal. Yeah. And just so much venom. I mean, diss tracks have gotten to the point now where it's almost like they're just silly at this point. Almost. Yeah. I mean, every once in a while, a banger comes along. You're like, oh, you know. But yeah, I can't see anything coming down the pike that's going to be any more fucking just visceral and again, personal than that.
There's a whole Kendrick and Drake shit going on right now, but that doesn't just get me as excited as, you know, those old school diss tracks, man.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to a song like No Vaseline or Ether.
Yeah.
You know, some of the, I still giggle like when they say certain lines, like it still strikes my funny bone, you know what I mean? Yeah, and I agree, man. I mean, the, you know, the Kendrick and Drake thing, like that's, it is what it is. I mean,
I guess you could add Kendrick to that list of working with Dre too.
There you go.
But yeah. Like just back to Ice Cube real quick. I mean, is along with his hugely successful solo career. Again, he goes to Hollywood, right? And, you know, starting with Boys in the Hood, and then he starts an acting career, and now he's, you know, he's in family movies. He's in everything. He's a versatile actor.
He makes family-friendly fucking content, dude. No,
I mean, I watched, you know, like, Are We There Yet? Like, those movies, I watched those with my daughter, and she's like, who's that guy? And I'm like, oh, let me tell you who that is.
You have no idea.
That's a man by the name of Ice Cube.
Yeah, I mean, it almost, you can't wait till she's old enough where you can actually play No Vaseline for her and be like, you know the guy from that movie? This is the same guy. Yeah. And then play that for her. She's going to be like, what? Oh, my God. Yeah, so moving on back into the guitar-based drums world, we couldn't wrap this episode up and not talk about Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath. There is another twofer, you know, when you talk about second acts, when Ozzy was let go from Black Sabbath. Sabbath was at, you know, an all-time high. They had broken America. They were here in the States, recording actually in the U.S. They were huge, huge. But they were all just out of their minds, man. I mean, drugs and booze, especially drugs, had just gotten into that band and just was causing havoc, man. They all were just a disaster. You know, as often happens in a band scenario, one guy, for whatever reason, gets the target put on him. You know, in this case, it was Ozzy. You know, Guns N' Roses, it was Steven Adler. He was the first one to get targeted for his excessive abuse. I mean, the whole band was strung out and drunk and high and whatever. And one day they decided, Steven's got a problem, and they kicked him out. Like, you know, I forget what comedian it was, but years ago they were like, how bad do you have to be to get kicked out of Guns N' Roses?
Right. Slash looks at you and says, hey, man, you got a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in this case, it was Ozzy. They decided, you know, he's out of control. And to their credit, he probably was the most out of control of the whole band. Because, you know, the rest of the band, they would party and get crazy and stuff. Ozzy was just insane. Ozzy went fucking bananas when he was drunk or high. At any rate, you know, Ozzy was gone. Now, again, we're left in a scenario where you've got the vocalist without a band and you've got a band without a vocalist. Both of them could have just crashed and burned. Black Sabbath could have gone to be no more. Ozzy could have crashed and burned. Ozzy goes on to an equally or even more successful solo career.
And to think, I recently watched a Randy Rhoads documentary. I think it's on Amazon.
Okay.
You know, because he was in, you know, Quiet Riot. And, you know, they were doing well in the L.A. scene. You know, he was kind of seen as a competitor to Eddie Van Halen.
Eddie, sure.
But Quiet Riot hadn't broke nationally. So,
right.
You know, someone told him about Ozzy and he should go audition. And Randy was kind of like, that dude from Black Sabbath? Like, because, you know, it's so heavy and dark. And that's not what that L.A. scene was about at that time. So he had to be talked into it to go meet with Ozzy. And, you know, then, of course, they clicked right away. But at first, it's just like, ooh, that dude from Black Sabbath?
That maniac?
Think of the music they created together in two albums before we lost Randy. I mean, Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman. I mean, both of them, track for track, just there's no holes. It's all great.
No filler whatsoever. And just two iconic rock/heavy metal albums. I mean, it's super sad to think that, you know, again, talk about what could have been, you know, had that fateful day not happened with the plane crash. But, you know, Ozzy and in a way, I think, you know, Randy kind of saved him in that in that respect, because he found another musical soulmate, you know, to find Randy Rhoads, who just brought him and into a whole new world as well, because Sabbath came up, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, that sound was kind of getting played out at that point. And like a lot of those bands were becoming dinosaurs. And, you know, here's this young, good looking LA cat, this shredder, you know, that kind of brought Ozzy into a new sound, certainly, but also introduced a whole generation of kids that maybe right. wouldn't have cared. You know, if he had just gotten some other veteran rock guy yeah. to play guitar for him,
right.
might not have cared.
And again, that's just the difference in the sound, you know, between just Blizzard of Oz and, say, you know, some of the Black Sabbath albums, just night and day.
Oh, sonically so different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got there's your first second act right there. I mean, Ozzy just goes on and all, you know, say what you want about her. You know, she's polarizing herself. But Sharon Osbourne, I mean, had it not been for Sharon Osbourne and all of her business yep. savvy, and she single-handedly yeah. saved Ozzy's life, not only music career, but I mean his life yeah. probably multiple times. I don't think Ozzy would be with us if it wasn't for Sharon. And, you know, she saw something in him that people were ready to write him off from music yeah. and the industry and everything. And she's like, nope, this guy, man, he's got it. And yeah, Jesus Christ, was yeah. she right? I mean, all these decades later, and he's still... Yeah. Still relevant. He's one of those people that, you know, 20, 30, 40 years from now, people are still going to be talking about Black Sabbath oh, for and Ozzy sure. Osbourne. I mean, yeah. he's, you know,
oh, yeah.
he's a legend.
That's the kind he's a legend. He's going to live on forever.
100%. You know, and then, of course, Sabbath, same scenario. Here we are without our you know, iconic frontman. What are we going to do? Enter Ronnie yeah. James Dio. And they have another string of amazing records, and Ronnie James Dio himself, talk about a second act. Yep. There's another, you know, he was already successful on his own, you know, Rainbow, and, you know, so Black Sabbath puts out a string of albums with Ronnie James Dio that were absolutely, Heaven and Hell to this day is still just an iconic album, some amazing songwriting.
When I hear that intro to Mob Rules, oh my God, I'd lose my shit, dude, I'm telling you.
That's a fucking banger, dude. And that one, yeah, to this day, that opening riff starts, dude, and you're just like, oh.
And you hear Ronnie's vocals come in?
Yeah. Oh,
shit.
He was a fucking powerhouse, man. I love Ronnie James Dio. You know, he could sing, you know, the alphabet song, and I'd just be like, fuck, yeah. yeah. He just had that voice.
L-M-N-O-P.
New Hampshire's own, too, man. Not a lot of rock stars come out of New Hampshire.
You know where he
all places.
But he grew up as a very young man. He grew up in Cortland, New York.
Cortland, New York?
And I've driven through Cortland, New York, and you can go to the street where he lived, and it's now called Dio Way.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah, I love
so
that.
If you're ever, like, just whatever reason you find yourself driving through the central New York state and you hey, I'm close to Cortland. Go check out Ronnie James. Yeah, yeah, you got to go to Dio Way.
It's almost worth a trip just to get a picture of the street sign. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm sure you'd find it on the internet a million times, but just to stand there and take that picture, dude.
As I'm there, you know, I'm of course holding up the camera, and I got my devil horns up underneath the Dio Way sign.
Nice.
You can see, like, the neighbors driving by, shaking their heads, like, "There's another one. Look at this asshole."
Ah, that's fantastic. I love that.
All right, so we only talked about 5 second acts here, but there are so many more, and we don't want to miss, you know, anybody. I know we're going to miss somebody, but we'd love to run through a list of some other just famous second acts. So you ready, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's jump in. Let's not forget about Phil Collins.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Right, Genesis and solo artist.
Amazing drummer.
Yeah, a great drummer. Yeah, Beyonce.
Oh, Beyonce, hell yeah.
Destiny's Child, right? Solo artist.
Right, yep.
Lionel Richie. Come on.
Ah, the Commodores.
The Commodores,
man.
Yes.
Hell yeah, dude. Hello? If Hello doesn't bring a tear to your eye every time it comes on, you're not
please.
Human.
Please. Yeah, you need to go have yourself checked out if you can sit through Hello and not get a little tinge of emotion.
Right.
Chris Cornell.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Soundgarden. And Audio Slave. Yep.
Audio Slave, yep. And did some solo shit too that was really good.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to love this one. Ready? New Edition.
Oh my God. Dude, ooh. New Edition gave us multiple.
Dude. Bobby acts, Brown.
Dude. Bobby Brown.
BD.
Belle Biv DeVoe. Fuck
Johnny
yeah.
Gill. And.
Nice. Oh, that's
and,
right.
And Ralph Tresvant.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you, man. My Prerogative is still a banger.
Dude, it's totally a banger. That was one of those songs. This always comes up at least once an episode, but I admit in my later years that there's certain songs that I never would have admitted to loving 35 years ago or whatever. Yeah. Dude, I've always loved that song, dude. My Prerogative and Every Little Step, I don't know why.
Yeah.
But that's a banger too, man. There's something about it's the beat. I don't know what it is, man. The hook, but Every Little Step by Bobby Brown is also another classic.
Dude, I can remember the same thing. Like we couldn't tell people we dug, but when My Prerogative came out, I was like, God damn, that's a jam. Like
yeah, totally. Totally. But we totally had, oh man, what's this crap? Yeah, what's this
crap? And let's not forget Poison by Belle Biv DeVoe.
Oh my God, of course, dude.
Can't trust a big butt and a smile.
That girly. Oh God. BBD is the shit, dude.
All right. Sting, of course, with The Police.
Oh yeah. And of solo course. Artist.
Yep. Paul Simon. Simon and Garfunkel and a solo artist.
Oh my God. Yeah. Huge. Huge. Yeah.
Wow. This one goes out to my wife, Lindsay. Peter Cetera.
Oh, damn. Chicago? Hell Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah. Go from Saturday in the Park to, you know, Gloria Love and After All. Yeah.
Man. Yeah. He was the movie soundtrack guy post Chicago. Holy shit.
Yeah. One of the biggest of all times. Got to be Michael Jackson.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And it. I mean, yeah, there's literally five of them. It was in the name. and one. Really, when I mean, yeah, okay, the others had some successes solo. I mean, Jermaine had, but I mean, nothing even close. Just you know, the only thing that those other four had in common was the last name. Michael was his own breed of cat, dude.
Yeah,
and yeah, went on to just and like you said before, could have easily rested on his laurels, as they say, post Jackson 5, and just been still a legend. You know, done nothing from a solo perspective, went on to become the biggest pop star ever on the planet.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yep. Amazing.
Like, this one's a little controversial, but I'm going to go with, we're going to go with Dave Mustaine,
right?
Originally in Metallica, kicked
out. I see where you're going.
Forms Megadeth.
I mean, I agree because he was in Metallica.
Yeah.
But this might be one of those ones where I'm going to go, but he was in Metallica before they blew up. So
it's very true. Very true.
Had he been in Metallica, let's say up through like Master of Puppets and then started Megadeth, I'd be like, absolutely all day. All right, man. I'm going to give it an honorable mention. How about that? Is that fair?
I knew going in that was going to be controversial. Yeah. Yeah.
Man. And I want to just be on board 100%, but I can hear my inner cynic going, but he wasn't in Metallica when they were huge. He was in before. So yeah, I'm going to go on honorable mention on that one.
Okay. Okay. Fair.
Like I make some sort of rules or something. I'm suddenly the gatekeeper of all it is second act and not.
Jimmy Page started with the Yardbirds then in Led Zeppelin. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, what was the name of his other band? Yeah. Led Zeppelin. I'm being funny. Yeah, dude, Page. Shit.
And this one under super obvious, but the Beatles.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I mean, obviously Lennon, McCartney, Harrison, Ringo, they've all had great,
for sure. Yeah. 100%.
Clapton, Cream.
And so
Yeah.
Yep.
And here's one for Justin Timberlake.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Right. NSYNC. And then huge solo artist.
Yeah. Amazing. And
this one's for my daughter. This is going out to Grace. This is Harry Styles.
I was going to say, dude, if that wasn't on the list, I was going to bring that up, believe it or not. Yes. Yeah. 100%, dude. One Direction. And then, again, even bigger on his own.
And I'll tell you, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know a lot about Harry Styles' music.
Yes, you do.
But...
Sorry. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, of course not. But if... run to YouTube and check out, look up his performance of Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer on the Howard Stern Show.
Oh, wow.
It's one of the best covers you're going to hear. It's
really
an amazing version of that song.
Oh, man. You might need to put that in your back pocket for the next covers episode.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Hell yeah. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah. Which brings me to Peter Gabriel. Again, another great second act, Genesis.
Hell yeah.
Solo artist. Alice in Chains.
Ooh.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Louis Lane Staley, William Duvall comes in. They've had a great career with William Duvall as the lead singer.
Yeah. And I give them a ton of credit because Lane is one of those people. That's almost like Nirvana going on you know, without Kurt. Yeah. Like, it's almost impossible. He was so iconic, and just the amount of love that the fans have for Lane is just insane. That it's almost impossible to carry on without him.
Yeah.
And while I don't think they're ever going to be able to match the level of popularity or fame that they had when Lane was alive, I give them all the credit in the world, and they're still putting out really, really good music. And William Duvall, man, shout out to Atlanta, still making great music and, yep, and still, you know, touring, and God bless him, man. That's really, really hard. Of all the people, you know, of all the bands that could carry on with a different lead singer, man, that's one that you would almost think is impossible. So yeah, good for them.
And then I'll finish with Tom Petty. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and Tom Petty, solo artist. Yeah.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah, I'd say that counts. What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. No, I mean, come on. So we just wanted to get a bunch of those in, because it just adds to the conversation when you're listening to this episode, and you're going to start thinking about the same thing, and you might come up with a few more. And
dude, my COVID brain's working again, man. Fucking Joan Jett, Lita Ford. What?
Oh, yes.
The Runaways. Yeah. The Runaways, come on, yes, man. Yeah, we're going to get off this call, and I'm going to think of 12 more in the first 3 seconds. Whatever, man.
Let's roll into some shout outs here while I can butcher some more names of some cities throughout the world and here in the States. Okay, we're going to go Syracuse, New York, Prineville, Oregon, Ellijay, Georgia.
Hell yeah.
Terre Haute, Indiana, Holly Springs, Rockaway, Queens.
Nice.
Are y'all singing Rockaway Beach from the Ramones in your head right now?
I 100% was singing the Ramones damn the second you said
right,
that.
Damn right. Feasterville, Trevose, Pennsylvania.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, there's a hyphen in there. Yeah. Now we'll do some international. Voisil, Bulgaria, Adelaide, Australia, Wangaratta, Australia, Sodiguarashi, Japan, Lorinha, Portugal, Elmshorn, Germany,
nice,
Mauá, Brazil, and Marliana, Italy.
Very cool.
Yeah, so everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for checking us out and coming back for multiple episodes. And then Eric and I wanted to finish with a couple personal shout outs to some folks that we met on our trips. I was lucky enough to visit County Cork, Ireland. And one day we had a driver that took us around to a few different spots. His name is Morris. It's spelled Maurice, but it's pronounced Morris. Just a true gentleman, a true son of Ireland. I sat up in the front seat and talked music with him all day, 6-7 hours in the car, just going from, you know, castles. He's a local. He knew all the back roads to take us all these really cool places.
That's awesome.
And at one point, we're walking into the Rock of Cashel, and there's a kid out front in the street with a guitar and a little amp playing a song that I just instantly fell in love with. I'd never heard it before.
And that's like, so cool.
What is that? And Morris knew. He pulled it up on his phone, and it was The Boys in the Better Land by Fontaines D.C., which I just fell in love with the song immediately. I downloaded it on the spot.
Nice.
But as we were driving around, he introduced me to a bunch of music I'd never heard before. A band called The Frank and Walters. And the song is After All.
All right.
There's this Slane McGraw. And the song is Where's Me Jumper? It's just a punk rock banger. Nice. It's like, Where's Me Jumper? It's just hilarious. Of course, Morris was a huge U2 fan. Introduced me some U2 songs that I wasn't familiar with, like Out of Control. And In a Little While, which turns out was the song that Joey Ramone's family played to him as he was passing.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, Morris turned me on to that. So that was really cool. And, of course, he shared a great story about meeting Edge and Bono at the Cork Airport during a snowstorm.
No way.
Yeah, back in the early 2000s. And he actually helped settle a little debate between Edge and Bono about where a certain club was in Cork that they played way back in the day when they were just kind of coming up. So really cool story. So, Morris, thanks for all the knowledge, taking us around Ireland, and just all the great conversation and introducing me to a bunch of new music.
That's what's up, man. That's how to like see a foreign land, dude. It really is. I've been fortunate enough to have similar experiences where like you have a driver for a day or two or whatever, you know, you just did one person. It's not a bus tour where you're just one of, you know, 75 other tourists, you know, it's a little more intimate. You get to really have one-on-one conversations and get to know this person. And, you know, of course their knowledge of their city or their country is immeasurable, but then again, to get to know them and get the real stories and, you know, you guys were talking about music and things like that. That's so cool. Yeah. That's so great, man.
Yeah, it was a great day, man. It was so much fun. By the end of the day, like he's dropping us off at our hotel. I mean, we were hugging each other. I mean, he was just a really cool guy. Yeah.
That's so, so cool, man. That's awesome. Well, I was in a completely different part of the world, but still had an amazing time, man. My wife and I got to go to the Galapagos Islands, as Max said earlier in the episode. Bucket list trip for Chris. You know, we've known we were going to be doing this trip for many, many years. And we finally got around to doing it. And it was 100% her trip. I knew I was going to have a great time. I mean, I could have fun at an insurance seminar, as long as it's a bar. But... but the Galapagos, man, was a once in a lifetime trip, man. I had so much fun, got to see some amazing stuff, and we were on Celebrity Cruise Lines. The ship was the Exploration. It was so cool because you think cruises, we're not really cruise people. I'm not into the whole like 800 passenger giant cruise ships. Yeah. You know, this was literally, there was 8 staterooms. So a maximum of 16 passengers. So one of the staterooms was actually empty. So there were 14 of us, 14 passengers. There were 10 crew members, not counting our guides. So there was almost a 1-to-1 like ratio of crew members to guests. It was absolutely fantastic. So I just want to say what's up and thank you to Xavier, Luis, Roger, Vicente, Carol, Dario, the chef, my man right there. Alex, the Ninja Boy, Christian, Augustine, and Captain Marco. That was the crew of the Exploration. Just, I can't even begin to tell you what an amazing time we had and what an amazing crew they were. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And of course, our amazing guides, Maria, who took us around the capital city of Quito. Beautiful city, amazing, got some killer photographs, just really, really cool. And of course, the Galapagos, you know, we had Juan Carlos and my buddy Orlando that took us around and taught us so much stuff. We're so infinitely knowledgeable about the islands and the history of Ecuador. And it was just an amazing, amazing trip. So just thank you to all of the people I just mentioned. Couldn't have had a better time. It was fantastic. So again, major thanks to Celebrity Cruise Lines and all of those folks I just mentioned.
Yo, I don't know Alex, the Ninja Boy, but I want to.
All right, dude. I was wondering if you were going to ask me about that, dude. The day, so like, you know, you get on a cruise ship and like, you know, the first day, you know, they let you get settled. And then like the first full day, you know, they introduce the crew and all that. The captain comes out and all that. They do a toast. And the guy who was like taking care of the cabins, you know, the staterooms, whatever, his name was Alex. And they called him Alex, the Ninja Boy. They actually introduced him that way because... Yeah. You would get up and go to breakfast. And again, this is not a huge cruise ship. Your cabin is in like eye shot of where you're eating breakfast. You know what I'm saying? And you would get done with breakfast and go back to your room. And somehow the bed was made and the room was tidied up and you never saw him go in and out. So they called him the Ninja Boy. It was hysterical. The guy was amazing too, man. And he did. And then towards the end, like we started to catch on to his routine, right? So like we'd be eating breakfast or lunch or whatever, and we would see him kind of duck into our room and we'd make eye contact and he would do like the ninja hands, like you didn't see him, and he would like duck into the room. It was really funny, man. They were a blast. It was a lot of fun. Oh my
God, that's awesome. All right, that kind of wraps things up. We always appreciate if you get a chance to rate, review, or subscribe wherever it is that you're listening to the podcast.
Yes, please do.
Check us out on socials. We're on Instagram, Twitter, or X, and Facebook, and YouTube. So wherever you'd like to check us out, we're there.
Yeah, and hit us with an email too. You know, this might be a topic, as we often say, we may revisit one day. So if there's other, you know, second acts that you can think of that we didn't touch upon, I'm sure there's a million. Give us an email, man. Let us know.
Yep. thegreatestmixtapepodcast@gmail.com.
All right, cool. Well, on that note, that's going to wrap it up for us. Thanks again for sticking with us in our prolonged absence. So good to be back. Mac, thank you, man.
No, thank you, man. Great to see you again.
All right, guys. Well, until the next time, this is the Greatest Mixtape Podcast. I'm Eric.
And I'm Mac.
And we'll talk to you soon.
See ya.